is WMUC FM College Park.
That
Fresh Radio piece, we got getting right into the Fresh piece for you guys. This is where we do some in-depth reporting outside the studio, and you should play some interviews. We actually have one taped interview we got, and we have a live interview afterwards, but we're going to talk about, we got the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. I actually didn't go, but Christian said it was an awesome time. You want to talk about that a little bit, man?
Yeah, great place. I went to the Merrill Center out in Annapolis, Maryland, where I'm actually from. Well, for the most part, that area was most of my life. And out there, it's on the bay, and it's beautiful. I highly encourage everyone to go out there. But it could be better. And this is kind of why, this is pretty much why I went over to Chesapeake Bay Foundation, which the headquarters happened to be near where I live. And actually, Merrill Center, for those of you UMD students out there, or just like affiliates in general, that is the same Philip Merrill that donated an enormous amount of money to the School of Journalism, hence his name up there in honor. So keep that in mind. Very interesting, yeah. And you know what? He did another great thing out there. Chesapeake Bay Foundation's Merrill Center. It's now their HQ. It's unbelievable. Check it out. Get in contact with me or just go to the website. But here it is. Interview with John Rodenhausen I did out there. Student Action Coordinator, Leadership. Great things we all need to keep in mind. And he's out there trying to just work with us and get these programs. So I'd say check it out. So could you introduce yourself?
My name is John Rodenhausen. I'm the Student Leadership Coordinator with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation here in Annapolis, Maryland.
And could you talk about the Chesapeake Bay Foundation? What is it? What's its mission, more or less?
Well, if you've seen the bumper stickers around, you know Chesapeake Bay Foundation stands for Save the Bay. And our sole mission is to engage people to preserve the water quality and hopefully improve the water quality of the Chesapeake Bay.
And could you talk about how it formed, the history of the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, how it's led up to this point where now we're speaking here at the Merrill Center, which is now the headquarters?
Yeah, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation started back in about 1967. There were three employees, and basically they were a number of guys who were tired of their fishing grounds being just absolutely polluted and getting worse. And so it has now evolved into a pretty substantial organization that has a headquarters here in Annapolis, Maryland. There's also a state office in Pennsylvania, Virginia, and one in Washington, D.C. And we have an education department that has been running for over 30 years, and we work with about 30 to 40,000 students and teachers every year throughout the watershed. Our goal in the education department is to affect behavior change. So basically asking people, primarily students and teachers, to take responsibility for their actions. If you live in the watershed, if you live in Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, D.C., New York, Virginia, or West Virginia, you are affecting the water quality in the Chesapeake Bay. And so our motto is basically, you know, get out there, get a chance to experience the watershed, and it's amazing what happens to people when they go home. They tend to start taking responsibility for what they're doing. Maybe they turn the lights off. Maybe they start buying recycled products. Maybe they start looking into environmental jobs so they can give back and really support the mission of saving the bay. So within the education department, I'm the student leadership coordinator, so I'm trying to get those super active folks like you, Christian, who are trying to promote activism and make sure that we take those awesome experiences and turn them into action that will tangibly increase the water quality in the Chesapeake.
And so when you were taking me through the Merrill Center, you showed me different departments, and so you all seem to be taking on a plethora of tasks. Could you talk about how you guys execute your mission to raise awareness and to have behavior change amongst everyone in the watershed and even beyond it, at least in an environmental sense?
Yeah, the way we're currently set up right now is for starters, it takes money to run an organization like this. So we have a development department that takes, and membership department that takes donations from interested citizens. They can buy a membership at www.cbf.org, and you get your bumper sticker, you get an e-newsletter, so you're up to date on what's happening. They also work with corporations and foundations to take larger donations. And then we also have a PR department, and they are basically operating our website, getting the message out, making sure our logo is in strategic places, so people know that we're out there and know what we're doing. Upstairs, we have a litigation department, and also a group of lobbyists, scientists, legislators, folks who are trying to affect the laws in each state that are in the watershed. For example, the flush fee that was passed last year. Landslide, awesome movement. It's basically changing the way sewage treatment is handled in Maryland, which is huge. So those folks are taking care of that. And then there's those of us in the education department who are getting not just students, but also some government officials and some legislators and other strategic minds, getting them out into the watershed so that they can understand some of the real issues, you know, really get your feet in the mud, you know, see what's happening out in the wetlands down in Tangier Sound, see what's happening up on the farms up in Rockingham County, Virginia, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. All these places are having a huge effect on the bay, so what we're trying to do is take all those departments and work in a synergistic way to positively affect water quality.
And all these departments are located here at the Merrill Center, and you took us on a tour and were explaining all the different aspects about how each little part really plays an environmentally conscious role. And you were saying, I mean, it's the greenest office building in the world. Could you elaborate on that and explain that to our listeners?
Yeah, we were spread out around a couple different offices in Annapolis, and as you can imagine, it's kind of hard for all the different organs of a person's body to operate if they're not in the same place. We were very fortunate to find this area here in Bay Ridge, and also very fortunate to have the generous support of Philip Merrill, who is the owner of the Capitol and has also significantly contributed to University of Maryland's Journalism School. He believed to the core that the environment was very, very important, and so he donated a lot of money that helped us build this building, and it costs about $50 more per square foot to build a building like this. But using such sustainable energy sources and sustainable building products, we have, in effect, already received a lot of that cost back. We've by reducing our electric bill by about 60% every month from an average office building, a lot of that technology has already paid for itself. So we have sustainable products in our floors. We use solar and passive solar, photovoltaic solar to power the building. We also have huge rain catchment devices. So when you wash your hands, you're probably using rainwater to do it. And I don't know if you had a chance to see the restrooms yet or not, but they are flushless toilets. They're totally composting toilets. So we've reduced water consumption from an average office building by 90%. So we have about 100 and some employees that work out of this office, and on an average day, less than 80 gallons of water leaves this building. So we're very efficient, and we're really proud of it. We've gotten global recognition for it, so we're pretty psyched to have such an inspiring building. But also, sitting here on the bay, it's pretty inspiring to look out over the water every day. So life is good.
And so, basically, in the end, the whole core, like, I guess, the element that's connecting all this is the bay. And so, I mean, clearly there's a lot to be dealt with. There's a lot of issues to tackle. And so I guess, how would you say why people should care, why people should get involved? I mean, I know that there's so much to say. We could go on for hours. But, like, among the most important things, and I guess in a general, like, sense, why this is something that needs to be preserved and worked upon, because, I mean, you guys have your State of the Bay report, and when I look at them, I'm not too, like, you know, enthused about how things are going, but I know you guys are really trying to change that.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the State of the Bay report right now, we've currently scored a 27 out of 100, and I don't know anybody in any school who would consider that a passing grade, not even close to a passing grade. So the reason why that's important and why a higher score is important, because that equates to healthier food, cleaner air, cleaner drinking water. I don't believe that a clean environment, and I don't think anybody in this building believes that a clean environment is considered a luxury. It is a right. It is a necessity. And quite honestly, the Chesapeake is a national treasure, just like the Everglades in Florida, just like the Grand Canyon. This is the largest estuary in North America, and it is really important that we take care of it. It's right here in our nation's backyard, nation's capital's backyard. If we can't fix that, if we can't make that change here, I don't know where that's going to happen. Over 16 million people live in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. It spans six states and the D.C. area. And we have 16 million people who are contributing to that, but are also either reaping the benefits or suffering from the environmental status right now. So I would say that also another reason why it's so important for everybody is because everybody's affecting it. You know, everybody lives downstream from somebody else. And, you know, there's that popular NIMBYism, you know, not in my backyard. People don't want pollution in their backyard, so they tend to get rid of it. They tend to send it, quote unquote, away. And the reality of it is, there is no away. When it goes to a landfill, that's affecting somebody else's backyard. When it goes to a sewage treatment plant, that's going to somebody else's backyard. And the reality of it is, we can all improve a little bit and have a huge, magnanimous collective effort and collective result that will really affect the way our kids grow up. So I think that by increasing the score of the State of the Bay report, we'll all benefit, we'll be healthier, and we'll be happier.
So I'm sure people are now wondering, I mean, that was a pretty persuasive speech right there, and so how could they get involved? And you're in charge of student action and leadership, so what are the things, programs that you guys have developed for someone around my age or in the high school level, for the typical person even, to get involved, things they can do from as little as, like, you know, when it's mellow, let it, when it's yellow, let it mellow, and that kind of thing, to actually, you know, building a rain garden or advocating for more programs on their campus. What could you talk about that?
First, I would say go outside. Enjoy the outdoors. Find a great place. You learn to love it, and you will take care of it. I mean, it's just human nature. We're smart people. We don't like to destroy our own habitat. Second, I would say come out on a field trip with us. CBF is a big organization. We have a lot of field resources available to us. We operate 17 different education centers, some of which are very close to University of Maryland. And we work with the university-level student on a pretty regular basis. We can always use more, so come on out. If for some reason you can't get out on one of our field trips, go to the website, cbf.org/student leadership. And there are a number of different project opportunities as far as, like you mentioned, how to build a rain barrel, rain garden. But we also have ways to act politically as well. So if you want to figure out how to write a letter to your senator or how to contact those folks, we're not telling you what to say, but we can tell you how to contact these folks and get involved. Involvement is 90% of the battle, maybe even 99% of the battle. Margaret Mead once said, never doubt the power of a small, thoughtful band of people to change their world. In fact, they're the only ones who ever have affected that world. So if you're interested, if you have the energy and the motivation to just get involved a little bit, we have a multitude of opportunities for you to do that. The student leadership program at Chesapeake Bay Foundation right now, what we're hoping to do is get motivated students involved, you know, get them fired up, take them out on a field trip, come on a 14-day leadership program over the summer. But when they leave the decks of our boats, when they leave the marshes, when they leave the canoes and they go back to their school and they're this neat little island of enthusiasm, we want to make sure they have something to keep that fire going, you know. So by going to the website, we've provided a number of different resources that will hopefully feed that fire, you know, fan those flames. And so we are launching this fall a student action network. So the resources that are on our website right now, you know, it's a good start, but we have something a little bigger, a little more comprehensive that will help you get anything from the funds that you need to install your project to workshop possibilities where you can learn how to do, how to build a rain barrel, how to build a rain garden, things like that, how to get involved. And we'll also have an opportunity for you to post a resume. So all you college students who are looking to get a job in the environmental world will have a comprehensive listing of jobs that are available, a place to post your resume so that all of our friends at, let's say, the Department of Natural Resources or University of Maryland Center for Environmental Studies, when they're looking for really interested, really high-quality environmental young professionals, they'll be able to find your resume on that website. So that's our goal. We want to give you... Well, let's just put it this way. I don't think I can build a leader. I don't think any of us can, but I can provide the resources for those people so it will nurture their natural ability. And let's say you don't feel really strong as a leader. Come on out on one of our field trips, and we'll try to give you the confidence and the skills that are necessary to do that.
And I guess to wind it down now, I think personally, this is my opinion, but like we're in a critical like state today where like the Bay like really needs, I mean, all the help it can get, and that, I mean, as you were talking about before, it's a necessity, it's a right, it's a privilege, like, it's not a luxury. And so I guess to finish off, is there any last words, like, of inspiration that you could give, I guess, for people to really think that you can have an effect and save the Bay?
Well, the reality of it is every individual is capable of making great change. You know, if you look at the mighty Susquehanna River that comes down the bay, 444 miles from upstate New York, and it dumps into the Chesapeake Bay, it's made up of single drops of water. You know, when rain leaves the sky, and so you put enough of those little drops of water together, look at what it's built, look at what it's made. So never doubt the ability each person has. So take your inspiration and come on out, you know, enjoy the Bay, and hopefully we'll save the Bay.
And what's some contact information you can give for people to get involved?
If you want to get involved, go to cbf.org, or you can contact me, John Rodenhausen, at 410-268-8816 here at the Chesapeake Bay Foundation.
All right. And that was an interview we had with John Rodenhausen from Chesapeake Bay Foundation. And now we have another guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself out there?
Yes, hi. This is Alex Zeese from True Vote Maryland.
And how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well for being 8:20 in the morning. How about yourself?
Yeah, we're used to it by now, but we're not typically up this hour.
Yeah.
All right, so could you talk about True Vote and its mission?
Yes. Well, True Vote Maryland has been a statewide organization for the past 3 years, and we're working to get a voter-verified paper record, or paper trail, as some people like to call it, put onto the voting machines in the state. Currently, Maryland is one of the only states, one of two states left, that uses voting machines that do not have any voter-verified paper trail statewide. So what this means is when you go in to vote in Maryland, you go in, you record your vote on a DRE, which is basically a touchscreen computer, and it doesn't print out any kind of copy of your vote. It's just stored in the memory of the computer. Now, that'd be fine, except for the fact that we found out that these computers are very vulnerable to all sorts of hacks. They're highly prone to computer errors. Really, they're just not designed with the security of the vote in mind. And because there's no paper trail, then there's no public transparency. So that's what we've been working on for the past 3 years, is bringing a lot more public transparency into the electoral process.
And I was telling you earlier that I used to work in the House, and I remember that a bill had been widely talked about how it addressed voting concerns after the disputed 2000 presidential election.
Right.
So could you talk about the history and place it in the context for us folks, since it has been, a three-year issue now or so?
Yes, sure. Okay, well, I guess you can start, really, at the 2000 election. And at the 2000 election, we all know there was the fiasco in Florida, and there was widespread public concern that something needed to be done to fix the election system in the state, in not just Maryland, but around the entire country. So what happened was a piece of federal legislation was passed in 2002. This is called HAVA, the Help America Vote Act. What HAVA did is it got rid of all the old lever voting machines and all the punch card voting machines. It also mandated that states take control of the voter databases, you know, who's registered to vote and who's not. What happened here in Maryland is we went a couple steps further. We had voting machines, which we could have kept, but rather than keep them, we got rid of all the voting machines and bought what are called DREs. DREs are these touchscreen voting machines. They're made by Diebold. These DREs, as I said, they don't have the paper trail, and they don't have the security problem. Another thing we did is we took, you know, traditionally elections were controlled by the counties. The state didn't get involved in a lot of the details. What we did is we concentrated all the power of the elections into the State Board of Elections, specifically under one person, which is the elections administrator. So now we've concentrated all the control of our elections into this one person. And that's led to all sorts of problems. She's the one who decides what machines we use. She's the one who decides pretty much every day-to-day operation we have during our election system.
And, yeah, I guess would you put some more of the history, I guess, in context? Maybe talk about some other instances of e-voting irregularities that happened in other elections?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, as most of your listeners are probably aware, there's a lot of questions about whether there was an e-voting hack in Ohio in the 2004 election. In the last, in the primary elections that are going on around the country, there's a lot of problems that have come up. In Texas, for example, in one primary, 100,000 votes mysteriously popped up on a DRE voting machine, or not a single machine, but throughout one county in Texas. 100,000 votes just start adding up. And so when you have an extra 100,000 votes in an election, that's a big problem. Now, they're saying that was because of a programming error. It wasn't a hack or anything like that. But, you know, who knows if that's true or not. You know, what's in a press release is, I mean, we just got to accept, hope that they're telling us the truth when they say that. And let's see. In Maryland, for example, in 2004, we had a problem where in Baltimore County, a bunch of machines had malfunctions. We have records of 12 or 15 or so machines not recording any votes in the election in 2004 in Maryland. And what that means is about 6,500 votes went missing during the 2004 election. How's that for a few examples?
Yeah, and so what now could be done to resolve this issue in True Vote's mind, especially for those who don't feel that their voting options are safe from hacking and tampering?
Well, we have, as I've been saying, we've been trying to get this legislation passed for a voter-verified paper trail. We had a lot of progress in the last legislative session where we got the House to unanimously pass a very good bill. It, not only did it provide a paper trail, but it did the most important aspect of a paper trail, which is after the election, making sure the paper records and the electronic records match. It's an audit. And you need to do an audit, otherwise the paper trail is meaningless. So we had legislation in that had an audit, had a paper trail, and the House passed it. The governor came out and said, if this legislation passes, I'll fully fund it. So then the leadership in the Senate killed the bill because of the political games going on between the governor's office and the leadership in the Senate.
And, all right.
But what people can do, anyway, let me go to what people can do for 2006, because I'm sure everyone's listening to me and saying, well, what do we do for 2006 right now? Our group is advocating that people vote by absentee ballot. You can call up your state board of elections or your county board of elections now and ask them to mail you a ballot, and they have to do it. That was a law that was recently passed in the last legislative session. So we're saying if you want to know your vote's going to count, you can get a mail-in ballot, or you can even go to your county board of elections office and ask them for a mail-in ballot and fill it out right in front of them. Both those options are there for people, and we're really strongly urging people use them. That way, if there is any question as to who wins the Senate race or who wins the governor's race, we can go back and count those records.
All right. And I guess, do you want to Could you put it maybe in like kind of like a timeline? What we should be like? How much time is left to make a change? In, you know, before the upcoming elections and.
Well, according to the State Board of Elections, there is not enough time to make a change for the upcoming primary or general election. I don't know if that's true or not because other states have made a switch from the DREs to what's called an optical scan voting system, which works kind of like a Scantron. You know, you fill out the bubble by your candidate's name and it's scanned into a computer, which records your vote. A lot of states have made that change in a very short period of time. But I would be shocked if that were done in the state of Maryland this time around. So I believe that our best chances are if people, I mean, people's best hope is to fill out the absentee ballots and vote that way, or vote by mail. And then we are going to be pushing for this legislation to go back into the Maryland State House, you know, next legislative session, which starts in January.
And if people want more information to
learn...
Yes, if
people want more information, they can go to www.truevotemd.org.
All right, well, thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate it.
All right, well, thank you for having me on. You all have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Bye.
And that was Alex Zeith of True Vote Maryland. And if you guys want to get involved with that, we'll link it up for sure on the website. So, yeah, James, you got a song?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little Les Claypool right now.
Oh, yeah, here we go. We'll be right back.
tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine. But I keep on thinking about you, sister, golden hair surprise, and I just can't live without you. Can't you see it in my eyes? I've been one poor correspondent, and I've been too hard to find, but it doesn't mean you ain't been on my mind.
Dog's house, they was watching you on TV raps. What's the haps on the cracks? shake 'em up, shake 'em up, shake 'em up, shake 'em. Roll 'em in a circle, break 'em with the 7, 7-Eleven, 7-Eleven, 7 even back door, little Joe. I picked up the cash flow, then we played bones, and I'm yelling domino. Plus nobody I know got killed in South Central LA. Today was a good day. Left my niggas to 12th grade. It's ironic, I had the boo, she had the chronic. The Lakers beat the Supersonic. I felt on the big fat fanny, pulled out the jammy and and my so deep, put her ass to sleep. Woke her up around 1, she didn't hesitate to call Ice Cube the top gun. Drove her to the pad and I'm coasting. Took another sip of the potion, hit the 3-wheel motion. I was glad everything had worked out. Dropped her ass off and then chirped out. Today was like one of those fly dreams. Didn't even see a berry flashing those high beams. Helicopter looking for a murder. 2 in the morning, got the fat burger. Even saw the lights of the Goodyear blimp, and it went Ice Cube's a pimp. Drunk as hell, but no throwing up. Halfway home, and my pager's still blowing up. Today I didn't even have to use my AK. I gotta say it was a good day.
Yo, it was a good day. It is a good day, yo. And we got a PSA up, yo.
When Hunter was first born, she had a stroke on both sides of the brain, and she had uncontrollable seizures.
My name is Hunter. I ain't Angel.
We were so excited for her to have the wish. We had to really sit down and think of what she really wanted.
My wish is find her house.
Our whole family have been firefighters all our lives, so this is a chance for Hunter to become a volunteer firefighter also, but it could be in her backyard if she wants it to be.
Sometimes I ring bells, play my friends, boys too.
She's a beautiful little girl who loves to play in her playhouse and have parties in her playhouse.
Pizza party! I love my firehouse.
There are lots of ways you can help make a child's wish come true. To find out how, visit wish.org.
Share the power of wish. My lucky day.
And this is that fresh radio piece, a counterbalance to the fair and balance. What's up, yo? It's like 8:41 this morning. Beautiful day outside, but oh my god, I haven't even looked at this all day, and it says 99 degrees outside. I don't know if that's correct, but it usually is. So, quite a day out there, I'd say. And I think James has a little tune coming right up.
Thank you.
This is WMUC-FM, College Park. Got that fresh radio piece. We're almost over. Got, what, 12, 11 more minutes, something like that. And, yeah, you guys should definitely check out WMUC, as always. WMUCradio.com. Got all the previous shows for the last week on there. They archive automatically. It's great. So me and Christian get our show up and running on the website. But, yeah, you should check it out. You have all the playlists, have, you know, some news about what's going on with WMUC recent, like, in the upcoming, like, weeks. You should check out some concerts they got. Looks like they got one August 1st, August 2nd. And, yeah, always they're online at MySpace, on LiveJournal, Friendster, Facebook. Just check them out. WMUC-FM, College Park. And also check out thatfreshradiopiece.com. That's our website. This is That Fresh Radio Piece. And, yeah, we have our last 19 shows this makes for us. All up on the website with descriptions of what we did on each show and trying pretty much to make that as up to date as possible because, yeah, I don't know. We were trying to just get that word out about the website. So I love that. Doesn't matter if you're on campus or listening to the station, you can hear us anywhere. ThatFreshRadioPiece.com. And, yeah, we're going to keep this music going as I read some community plugs, letting you guys know how to get involved in this upcoming week. And this is an ongoing event that we've been covering a good deal, the Troops Home Fast, happening at Lafayette Park right behind the White House from 12 to 2 and 5 to 7 p.m. Those are like the peak hours there. They're usually around all day, though. We got Colonel Ann Wright, Diane Wilson, Media Benjamin, Dick Gregory, all veterans, Iraq citizens, and others gathered in front of the White House. They are the peace activists, fasting to bring home the troops. Organized by Code Pink, the Women's for Peace, group of long-term fasters launching a historic hunger strike against the war. During the first week of the fast, two people left the fast for medical reasons, but the others are remaining strong. I guess it's been a week and a half or so since they started now. They have over 3,700 supporters, celebrities, veterans, mothers, and concerned citizens across the country are also participating in a rolling over fast all over the summer, fasting as long as they're able, and then passing the fast from person to person. And we have people like Willie Nelson, Michael Franti, Danny Glover, Sean Penn, Susan Sarandon, Gulf War vet Michael McPherson, writer Alice Walker, and labor leader Doris Huerta, among a lot of others, as you can tell, 3,700. And, yeah, you guys check that out from 12 to 2 and 5 to 7 primarily. And or just go to the website, which was troopshomefast.org. And on Tuesday, we have from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Bus Boys and Poets, showing of Sir No Sir. It's later today. My buddies are going to that, but that should be awesome. The movie was so sweet. You guys should definitely check it out. Join us for the opening night of the Foreign Policy and Focus Summer Film Series, featuring the critically acclaimed documentary Sir No Sir, written and produced and directed by David Ziegler. Tells the untold story of the GI movement to end the war in Vietnam. Also later today, at 7 p.m., the Movement Building in Washington, D.C., Where Will It Take and How Do We Move Forward? The Community Coalition for Justice and Peace and the U.S. Social Forum Organizing Committee of D.C., meeting at St. Stephen's Church, which is 1525 Newton Street, Northwest, D.C. And if you want to find out some more about that, you should contact Ilana Solomon. Her number is 202-835-1240. Or you can email her at ilana.solomon@actualaid.org. Got tomorrow at 7 p.m., the Mobilization for Global Justice meeting, also at St. Stephen's Church on 16th and Newton Street, that is. Take the Columbia Heights Metro stop to get there. But Mobilization for Global Justice is a Washington, D.C.-based group that works on issues of global economic and social justice and sustainability. We believe another world is possible and necessary. We envision a world free of corporate domination and crushing debt, particularly in communities of color, and we act to change the institutionalized violence wrought by international finance and trade institutions, such as the World Bank, IMF, International Monetary Fund, and the World Trade Organization. And you should just check that out. It's every Wednesday from 7 to 9 at St. Stephen's Church. Check them out, www.mobilization.org. www.globalizethis.org. And Thursday, 6:45, we got a discussion on Iran as a threat to the United States. Issues to be addressed include the century-long history of big power intervention in Iran, the U.S.-Iran conflict over Iran's nuclear energy program, impact of sanctions, U.S. foreign policy in Iran. This is going to be overseen by Bob Petrasak. He's a retired attorney and grad student from George Mason University. We've got Ambassador John Limpert, a scholar of Iran, former diplomat, hostage in Tehran, former president of the American Former Services Association, Simon Rouhana, economist, Richard Rubenstein, professor, and the moderator is Rostam Portsgov. Thursday also from 6:30, that is happening at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Arlington at 4444 Arlington Boulevard. And, yeah, sorry about that. We got from 6:30 on Thursday, the summer film series on HIV and AIDS happening at 1225 Otis Street in Northeast. African Action will be hosting a summer film series focused on HIV/AIDS in Africa. Films will be shown every other Thursday, followed by a speaker. And the series will take place around D.C. is completely free. So check that out Thursday at 6:30. Friday at 7, protest John Negroponte at his house on his birthday, Woodley Park Metro, then to the 3100 Cleveland Avenue where he lives in Northwest. Yeah, that's right, the Woodley Park Metro stop. Take that. This is organized by D.C. Anti-War Network, Dawn. And you guys should definitely go out to that. On Friday, 6 p.m., impeachment teaching at Busboys and Poets, from 6 to 8, that is. And there will be a DVD viewing and discussion with featured speaker David Swanson. Watch a screening of the 30-minute documentary, How to Impeach a President. And a few more community plugs here. We got happening in D.C., a peaceful rally to protest ongoing Israeli violence in Gaza and Lebanon on July 18th. What is that? That's today. Sorry, I don't know the date. That's today from 5 to 7. Happening right behind the White House, 1600 Penn Avenue. And you should take the McPherson Square Metro. This is supported by U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation, www.endtheoccupation.org. And this is your last chance to give summer relief to New Orleans. You need to respond ASAP if you, from August 2nd to 7th, staying at the Xavier University. If you're in the area, people will be traveling from Baltimore, either plane or bus, down to New Orleans. And the transportation is the only cost to get down there, about $170 for the bus, $220 for plane. And you should respond very quickly to DEEP, DEEPJ19. That's DEEPJ19 at umd.edu. And you guys definitely check that out. I know me, Christian, and Diego all met on a trip to the Gulf of Mississippi to do some hurricane relief. It was organized through Mary Perg, and it was one of the best experiences of my life. But we're going to get into, of course, the song we always end with, the Revolutionary Etude.